Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to the LJL OU's podcast, Season 2, Episode 7, or forever, Episode 35, as it's just been staying like that in the document. I can't be bothered to change it.
I just can't remember.
It doesn't matter now. I just like the idea that we know we ended on 35, and we'll eventually get to another 35, and there'll be the special 70th episode, and it'll be a special... I will be one of your three co-hosts for this podcast. Alex, otherwise known as actually by Mars Swan on the internet. The man in the middle is the breathtaking man himself. Samuel Initialize Hapgood, welcome, sir, to the podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
And obviously over on the other side of your screen, it's the wholesome man himself as well. It's Alex Nightmare Hapgood, welcome as well.
You wouldn't be calling me wholesome if you saw my in-game chat.
No, that's hey, I'm
looking
to.
At that shirt. I can see your in-game strat.
Hell yeah.
Hash mute all so I don't see your in-game chat, mate. You seem wholesome to me.
To audio listeners, he's got a great band t-shirt on called Feeder, which
it works.
Wonderful double entendre.
Yeah, it's my league shirt and also my rock t-shirt. I have many rock t-shirts, but one of many.
One of many. Nightmare. What is this podcast that people have stumbled into?
Well, if you've never been here before, obviously, welcome to you. Nice to have you here. This is a podcast where we talk about Japanese League of Legends, and that means that we talk about the Japanese League of Legends Professional League, which is the LJL, League of Legends Japan League. And we do a podcast kind of supporting all that content with that, with the three of us.
And with us doing this podcast and our Twitch streams and the YouTube, Samuel, do we have any connection with Riot Games or their partners?
We do not. No, we do not. As of the moment, this is completely off our own back, doing our own thing with our own opinions and the like attached. But no, Riot is not involved in any way, shape, or form as it stands.
And with all of that said, you can find all of our social media accounts underneath our faces, at MarsOne for myself, at Initialize with one. We will one day get him the full proper name, and at Nightmare. You can also find the LJL OU's Twitter, Discord, Twitch, and YouTube channels, and any other social media accounts you are interested in finding us on in the link description down below, or in the show notes, or you can just search in most search engines in LJLOU and you'll find us. This podcast is also available on all audio streaming platforms, so if you're interested in being an audio listener, like the brain went too fast for a second there and the mouth couldn't keep up, like Nightmare was mentioning earlier, you can find us on all of those audio platforms. Gentlemen, episode 7. We've got a lot to cover as we have had 16 games happen between when we last spoke on the podcast around the LJL. Week 5 and week 6 have happened. Standings might be on the screen right now. I'm seeing a little nod from Nightmare. I think, yes, the standings are up there. We've got Super Week. The placement of our teams have changed somewhat now. Got some ties there. We will then also be talking about, well, everything playoffs. Let's go through the standings. We'll then be covering the teams and our expectations for week 7 and the teams left to make playoffs. We'll be explaining why some of these teams in the table are highlighted in a very light green. And then we're going to be speaking about our thoughts of the LJL so far and going into about now that we're almost done with the spring split. So, gentlemen, let's start off at the very bottom of the table. We're going in a different order to what I believe is probably on screen. So let's start off with the team. Honestly, I'm pretty concerned to talk about as I had a lot of stock in them. And my stock has plummeted so far. It's like the first gone of Bitcoin. It's not good, lads. Axis. So before Super Week, they had a win over the bottom two teams with an 0-4 performance. They've now been joined by those bottom teams as they actually gave the losses to those bottom teams. What hope do we have for them now? They're on a 6-loss streak.
I think the thing with Axis is they've got two strong players, I think, in particularly Honey and Seb Hoglet on a side there, who's actually putting up decent numbers. But it's not been enough, and there's been a sort of collapse in the mid-game from this squad, and I don't know whether that's a confidence thing, I don't know whether that's just a drafting thing sometimes, where they hit these mid-games and they are pretty much losing every fight they choose to take. Part of it is, I think, We saw them switch in Nemo and Dicey, the substitute support, in and around a bit. So they're not feeling especially happy, I think, with the way they're engaging right now. And I think Megumin and Ino are still a little bit raw. And it's showing a little bit in the play where sometimes, especially in an even or a losing game state, they just become quite quiet. And I think that has proven to be a bit of a problem because, like, the last few games, it's like, well, how are they engaging? It's been like Hoglet flashing in for a Blooming Blows into Lilting Lullaby has kind of been their only engage once or twice. It's like, this is proving a bit rough. However good Honey is, you need a little bit more of a firm foundation to build on, particularly in the mid games, where I do think things are falling apart quite quickly for them.
I mean, to really emphasize how bad this is going for them, two of Burning Core's wins are both from their wins versus Axis in week 5 and week 4. So, week 5 and week 4. Yes, I was right with saying that. Which just doesn't really fill me with much hope. The fact that Burning Core is sitting at 3-9 and, Nymera, what's your thoughts on this?
I have a slightly... Well, I'm going to take a different take on this, because coming into this week, we were asking, what can Axis do? And one of the things that I was saying is, well, okay, there was that one game where we saw Megumin play Azir, and we saw Honey play Tristana, and at least they had the damage components that they needed to late-game team fight and maybe play around that. We saw a couple of Azir games out of Megumin. They weren't great. So for me, I thought it would be nice for them to kind of, like... I guess kind of go back to the roles on the team and these team comps that they were playing that they'd found some success with, and instead that's not really happened at all. Or rather they've done that and it's just not been successful. So I look at this now and I'm like, I actually don't know what direction you head in. I think the only chance really is to roll that dice and just be like, all right, we're gonna go try something new. I don't know, get Megumin onto a counter pick or something like that.
Go back to the Zed, right? Go try and Hail Mary.
At this point, it is legit Hail Mary. Because I'm sat there, I'm like, okay, well, we've seen Megumin try and play stuff like Seraphine, try and play supportive. We've seen him do some damage stuff. And there was that one game versus Rascal Jester, which they won, right? But it's a far cry away from that now. This team is running on fumes. And it needs to restock and come back with something special. Because it wasn't like that for Super Week.
I mean, if you guys want to do a bit of checking out your own times back at home, all ye listeners and viewers, like, go check out some of their gold graphs, because it'll be like dead even, slight lead to opponents until about 10, 15 minutes, and then they'll lose a catastrophic team fight and go down about 3,000-4,000 gold off the back of it. Like, it happened in week 7, it happened in week 6. The one versus V3 is particularly egregious, where it is about 100 gold difference at about the 19-minute mark, and then Mujin and Ace destroy them in the mid lane, over and over again, and on the re-engage, they lose even more. And it just seems to be that there is this moment in the mid game when they're setting up for an objective where they just sort of like get aced, lose the objective, lose probably a tower or Baron at the same time, and the game is over from there. And it happens consistently.
And I think the thing about Axis is that the way that they've often won in the region is kind of different to how a lot of the other teams have won. Like, I think back to, well, Hoglet when he was doing well last year and how they were winning this year. And often they would actually get some really good ganks off and destabilize the map in a way that a lot of LGL teams just don't bother with. Actually, when we talk later about the LGL and kind of like now MSI's been announced, what do we think of the region and all this other stuff? And I'm like, not really crushing the early game. Axis sometimes do. Actually, they sometimes do run into lanes and just be like, yeah, you don't get to play the game. And they've not had that happen for a little while, though. And
I would argue that with, obviously, Coach Yang leaving and going to DFM, I think that's been a huge thing. I also think the fact that 4 members came in that are brand new to the squad has really kind of put a glaring light on some of the things. Obviously, we've learned that in interviews, Hoglet is obviously a very important vocal member in the team. But obviously that kind of shine has well and truly ran out by this point. And I just kind of wonder what can Axis even hope for, even in a Hail Mary situation. They haven't got a great stat life. Get a few games to go into week 7. Axis are playing against Crest Gaming, Act, and Rascal Jester. So they have already beat the Jesters once before, but this is a very different Jesters to who they first faced. And Crest Gaming, Act have been quietly confident against a lot of these lower teams. They might be the best of the worst, but I mean, being the best of the worst means at least you'll get playoffs at this point. And And personally, I think Axis might be the worst team now in the LJL. They've returned to form. And it's sad to say that.
I think other teams have improved faster than they have. And they're just a little bit slower on the load.
Faster, but it's not like the other teams are improving particularly fast.
No, I know.
We're looking at CG. Well, the other three down.
We're talking
down
like
moment.
Snail's paces yep. here for Burning Core.
Yeah, it's a tad glacial. It's a tad glacial.
Hey ho, but gentlemen, that's with us all going like that and barely wanting to agree, but we're all kind of in that same sad spot. Let's go on to the next two teams who I've actually tied together because I don't believe there's much really worth talking about separately from these two teams, as they're tied at the hip. Burning Core and the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks at the moment. They both went 1-3. Sure, but you beat Axis. Both of you had some hard games, but they were just so bad. And let's be real, gentlemen, their losses were so bad. Like, I'm thinking specifically the second Burning Core game that they played, the one against Crest Gaming Act, where I was like, okay, if they're going to ever have a hope here, it's going to be against Crest. Nope, nope, no. Yeah, sure, it went to 41 minutes, but I never thought Burning Core were going to win it.
So, effectively, in the Crest Gaming Act loss that they had, they had a couple of things they could do. They could rely on Zenith's Ezreal to do something, or maybe try and get picks onto Kassin's Karthus, which he picked up a lot. We'll talk about that when it comes to it, because there's a lot of drama around that. And Tossel looked bad this Super Week. He pathed okay. He just chose wrong fights. He mechanically misplayed. His decision-making was a bit off in terms of what he was doing with the Skarner, and I think that basically I'm confident saying now in terms of Zenit, you can't rely on Zenit to carry this team. You can't, nope. Right? Because I thought Zenit was pretty good in the first couple of weeks, and you did have that 14 kill Samira game. Well, guess what? Samira's now not in meta; she's been nerfed, so you can't really get much done with that. So you're sat there thinking, all right, well, this team doesn't have the only carry you've got. Is maybe Zenit on that bot side and.
You're now saying that you can't rely on him.
You can't rely on Zenit, and Dasher not exactly.
I think Dasher had a decent week, and I will say I thought, for all that they lost it, there were signs of life from the Hawks game versus Sengoku when they got at them quite a long way ahead on the Jace. They just didn't utilize it very well in the mid game. They got him the five plates. They got him a significant lead. Like, there was at least a game plan that they were trying to execute, and they did so relatively okay until they failed in the mid late game with like what they wanted to do with the lead they got.
What I was gonna say is like they had a game plan for like 10-15 minutes, and then that petered out for like a 10-15.
Yes.
And the thing when you're playing something like a Jace composition is that you can't really let the foot off the gas, and that's there's a reason. The reason the LGL doesn't there's a reason I was kind of worried for them heading into that game is that the LGL just doesn't play around like pressure tops in the way that Jace is. You know, you can have stuff like your Renekton and your Volibears kind of popping off in 1v1s, and that's often what we see out of our best top laners. But you rarely see a Jace split pushing to win. And actually, well, I mean, we'll talk about, I mean, the other team, Sengoku, has actually managed to do something a little bit like that, but Hawks tried to, and they did not succeed, not very well.
Oh, I mean, I was just under the impression that Sengoku versus Burning Core and the Hawks, they were just trying to play the game very differently. Like, they played basically identical against those two teams specifically, and it was like, why are we doing this, guys? Are you just trying to see if you can keep almost even for the longest time and then just slap them? And then against Burning Core, they just rolled over at the 7-minute mark, so it was like, oh, well, okay, I guess we'll have to do something different. And yeah. I don't know, we'll talk about, obviously, Sengoku a bit later, but Hawks and Burning Core, I mean, this is going to be an important topic for later. Obviously, these two teams are playing, so we'll talk about that later. But that's going to be an important match, I think, to say the least.
Yeah, it might well be important. I kind of agree.
But a team that probably doesn't need to worry too much about playoffs, even though they're not a lock yet, unlike everybody else we're going to be talking about, Crest Gaming Act. So, Crest, guys, you beat the Hawks. You beat Burning Core. You're the best of the worst. Nice.
Nice.
But those losses, I'm thinking specifically CGA versus V3, was a real rough match for them. Great for V3. Like, great for V3's confidence. Oh, Bucks, if you're a Crest Gaming Act fan right now, because it's like, you're really the best of the worst, but you're nowhere near quite the next level up, right?
There's such a, like... inconsistent. Well, the consistent.
Yeah, both of you have your hand in your.
There's such a consistent team in regards to that. You know that there's going to be like heroics and tragedy is kind of the term I've been using. Where like they go for the big play most of the time, and actually most of the time it doesn't work out. But a couple of times when it does, it wins them a game.
They're like, oh. It's like the problem is that sometimes the tragedies are in draft. It's like I will draft the no flash Karthus into
versus
a Leona.
And it's like, and the shot.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the Karthus pick was really good. So they picked it up what two times this in Super Week?
Back to back, yeah.
Yeah, back to back. And Kassin looked really good. I think Kassin is actually still very good. I think that Kassin is a good individual player. I also think that Nation is not a bad individual player. Mm. And I think Knap, while he doesn't crush early game, has more than impact, decent impact in team fights. And that means that CGA have managed to at least use those parts to kind of scrape out wins versus these lower teams. And actually, as you're saying, versus V3, they were in with a chance. They had an early soul point versus them, and then they got absolutely mullered. Now, I think that's on a couple of things. I think the big thing now is that, you know, I know that we were giving a lot of... in the same way we were kind of doing this to Yuhi on Burning Core, we gave like a lot of allowances to Milan and said, all right, okay.
Yeah, we did.
You've had some good moments. Well, let's see what you can do when you're actually given the resources, given the opportunities. Milan is... he had some real bad moments. So in the Kaiser game versus the Hawks, eventually came online. It took them a while. They ulted into a Mega Gnar more than once. That didn't go so well. But then they did clean up a couple of team fights. The V3 one, though, this was Azaya with Gale, Force, Ult, and Flash. So that's like three escape opportunities away from, you know, the big skill shots. Mm-hmm. Gets hit by a Solar Flare. And this is around the big dragon fight for CGA V3. And it pretty much snowballs the game against them. He even got a second chance at another fight later on around the Baron. And he similarly flubbed. He flubbed like the two important chances in that game, and I'm just sat there like, well, at least you got yourself into a position where you could win the game, but that's not great, dude.
But even then, we also have to then look at it from the V3 perspective and go, well, Reiner and Kokog knew how to stop them from doing anything, so credit there, right?
Yeah, I mean, so here's some stats that probably back that up a little bit, in that, like, Milan has the highest average death of any AD carry in the league.
That's not good.
He has got the lowest kill participation of any...
That's really not good.
But he does, in fairness, still have decent DPM numbers. He is just behind Sol, Honey, and Utapons. So
what we're saying is, when he gets of someone, when he starts attacking them, he's really good at dealing the damage, but he'll commonly stop aggroing, wait 3 minutes, and then someone else will get the kill on that person who's at, like, half health.
I mean, I think what it's... Yeah, and I think it also potentially speaks to me of someone who's got some slight issues with positioning and getting caught.
Yeah.
And also not being in the right place at the right time. So I'm in the wrong lane, so I'm not there for the team fight. Or I'm in a team fight and I'm getting caught out when I shouldn't be. So like that macro sense is still lacking from this guy. And it shows a little, I think. Al's right.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. Crest Gaming Act. The problem is their losses felt convincing to me. Mm-hmm. I think...
I agree.
Obviously, they've now got the fastest loss in the LJL, which they received during Super Week, and Burn It and Detonation Focused Me improved their speed running record in the LJL for the spring split from 1:53 versus Burning Core to now 21:43. They stopped off 10 seconds. That's a good world record. I could definitely see Summoning Salt doing a video on that kind of world record progression, but it felt pretty bad to watch this one. It was just like, then you just got to see everything of Crest Gaming get absolutely pulled apart.
So basically, we drafted in a lot of gas casters for Super Week this week, and thank you very much if you're listening in, and that's Greyheart, Counterfeit, and Kashka came in as well, yes, and then also our production week, Patrick and Reed came in, so thank you very much for those, quick shout out to them, lovely blokes. Greyheart was casting with me, and we cast like three CGA games, and a lot of them were quite bad. This DFM game, you'll notice, like, we were completely all over the place in the caster points. We were just saying, like, how does this game snowball so badly while feeling just so casual? Because it's just like, oh, another person's dead. Oh, I guess that's, like, four people dead right now. And it's just like, it came out of nowhere. And CGA just got rolled. They just got completely rolled. They In other games in Super Week, they're banning away stuff like Tristana. I reckon that's because they can't lane against it, even when they have picks which are okay against it. We can see in this one why. Because they got completely dumpstered by Yuuzhan's Tristana. And this game was not remotely competitive, and that's why it was so quick.
Yeah, and you can just look at the gold rough for that one. It's just a slow burn of slowly going away from them, and then by the 10-minute mark, you're like, wait a second, DFM up, like, 3.4k ahead, what? There's only been three kills for them. It's like, yeah, but Crest Gaming Actor are behind in so many other aspects of this game. Gold is only one of these things. It wasn't great, but hey, at least they show they're probably going to be making playoffs, so good for them. Good for them. Gentlemen, we must move on to a team that has locked themselves for playoff. They are guaranteed. We don't know where they'll be in the standings. Obviously, it's unlikely they'll be able to get improved past third place, but third place would still be pretty good for them, especially if they wanted to take out somebody else, and that is Sengoku Gaming. So, outside of you boys at Sengoku angering Detonation Focus Me and then getting your asses handed, I'm fully serious about that, but obviously, good game, still blows up at 24 minutes, whatever, but outside of that, you beat V3, and we saw different play styles from you. I'm pretty impressed.
Yes. Considering we were pretty low on this team heading into this split, it felt like this Super Week in particular, they managed to kind of rewrite their own narrative book a little bit that we kind of handed them and said, "This is these are the players you've got. This is how we think you should play." And, you know, that's kind of what you have to work off of, right? We don't have access to the teams. We kind of sat them like, all right, a load of aggressive players. They're going to play aggressively. And versus DFM, they fucking did. It was great. It was awesome. It was a wonderful, really good game.
Really nice contest. It was a fun game.
Team fights to the nines. It was really fun. It was maybe my favorite cast I had that weekend. It was great. And
it was a lot of fun.
Loads of big plays. But thing is, though, actually, what Lexi was talking about is that actually they played two games of Camille. One of which, one of them was versus DFM.
And well, there was Ignite Camille as well. I got a solo kill onto Webby. Like, you take those
exactly huge. Some really big individual performances. But anyway, there are a couple of points where they kind of played a couple of games in the same way, where they realized that they had a winning side lane matchup, and they were slowly but surely whittling down turrets, getting pressure on the other side of the map, and whatever. And decided, well, we don't need to fight then. And that's why their games went to like 40 minutes or more than that. Just being like, we just don't never need to fight. We just let Paz split push. He's not going to go for the 1v1. He's just going to push towers and eventually we'll win. And they did that. And that's not something I'd ever thought I'd see out of Sengoku. But it worked. Two wins for that style, I suppose. Oh, no. I mean, well, the DFM one was okay. If you count the DFM one as one of them.
Yeah,
no,
that, didn't play out. That one didn't play out quite as well. Yeah. Partly because Paz with the Ignite was definitely feeling a little bit more awkward and vision control versus DFM is always harder. And, you know, you're trying to split push on Camille without vision, it's going to end badly. But yeah, I think particularly the one versus V3. CogCog ended at 0-5-0 because Crash and Paz put CogCog in the dumpster multiple times. And, like, played... And especially because this was after we'd come into Super Week, basically saying, yep, Sengoku have got a fantastic, strong side of the map in the bottom lane. Play through bot, and they'll have a way through V3, and they do the exact opposite. They draft Senatarm Kench in the bot lane and Udyr Camille topside, and they go, we're playing through top, and we're all like, what? And they made it work really, really well. They played around a lot of the vision, took out a lot of the vision, then just basically put CogCog in the dirt. Every time he tried to look for a trade, Crash was there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example of when Sengoku got, hilariously, the best performance was their first performance of doing this kind of strategy, and it was against V3. And I think, honestly, you just have to look at the kill count at the end of it. 12 kills in total in this game. Yeah. We've had more than that in the first 15 minutes in some other matches during Super Week. The fact that Sengoku has a 10-2 versus V3, who are also a team that are more than happy to get down and dirty and fight... Go watch this game, ladies and gentlemen, because this is a really good one that kind of...
Watch it on, like, 2x speed, but yeah.
Yeah, watch it on 2x speed, and then go and watch the DFM one, and then you can see the kind of differences on why it worked out for Sengoku versus V3, and why it didn't pan out as well against DFM, because some of the decision-making each of these teams are making is... one is better than the other, I would argue. Mm.
Yeah, I think... Sengoku still potentially have a little to work on in when they pull the trigger in the late game, because you saw it, kind of saw it versus DFM where they pull the trigger loads in the early game, because it kind of got them back into the game. Because it's like there was an early solo kill that Utapon got into Gengar, where they think, oh no, it's all over, and then Crash comes in and makes things more complicated. Paz is getting stuff going at the top line, and I appreciate the fact they are willing to step up and look for fights and play the game and not just bleed out slowly. But the problem is you can end up just chopping your own arm off and bleeding out real fast if you pull the trigger a bit awkwardly, and like, they've definitely got a lot to work with. I think they are a team to be threatening. I think along with V3 and Rascal Jester, we'll talk about in a minute, they definitely can push to go quite a long way in these playoffs.
I think the one last thing is that another big change, like, which I actually think is worth noting on, is so last year we saw Gengar get dumpstered when he was on weak side of the map. Now Burning Core tried to do that to Sengoku, and don't get me wrong, Burning Core not a great team, but then Gengar basically just like out traded the end, just in vertical jungling, walks up, takes a really good trade versus an Ezreal Karma at like level 2, and like completely breaks their strat open. It's like, well, you can't like divers anymore because your HP is too low. You're running a cleanse instead of a heal and ready carry. That doesn't help things. And that means that this Phalanx is now kind of going to just collect farm at turret, and you can't do much about it. In fact, it was more than that. They ended up breaking down the bot lane turret themselves. So I think that's actually, Gengar showed a lot more, and because he also had a Senna game as well this week too. Yeah, I feel like Gengar in particular had much like Sengoku found a new style to play. It felt like Gengar also kind of showcased a more broad style of play than we've seen from him before, and that's quite important for Sengoku.
I'd agree. It was that kind of hyper carry that instead of getting fed all the kills, it's told, hey, sit and farm, don't die, okay, Gengar? Don't fucking go for that third kill that you really want. Yeah. And they told him not to do it. And then they just start winning 40-minute games. It's wild, guys. I'm actually kind of flabbergasted.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, two Aphelios games, a Kalista game, and a Senna game, which is three very different champions, play very different styles, and did a really good job with it in very different games. So as we said, like, in vertical jungling, still wins the lane and gets first turret off that bot lane.
Yeah.
What? Like, that? I mean, that whole game versus Burning Core, they lost all three out of towers, most of the plates, for various reasons, for Burning Core. We were slightly in awe of how badly that early game went, but at the same time, you know, credit to people like Gengar for really turning the screws.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that means, gentlemen, we should probably stop gushing over Sengoku Gaming. Last, while we could go on and say, obviously, Burning Core and Hawks matches, I don't think there's much more. We've already covered it from the alternative perspective that they got kind of slapped, and while we could go in more depth, I don't think we'll really do much justice to do that, and we'll just be repeating ourselves a little bit. So let's move over to another team that we probably do actually have a half decent amount to talk about, and that is going to be V3 Esports. So not a good super week for V3. They lost against both Rascal Jester and Sengoku, and while I think they're still playing, well, like, fine, it looks like they're the best of the top four versus the bottom four, because now there are two fours, and V3, in my eyes, have now fallen to the bottom of the top four, meaning they could still beat anyone in the top four, but I'm hesitant to say that they're good. DFM next week, it's going to be a very important test, as that'll be the last of the gauntlet running back around. If they can have a good showing versus DFM, even if they lose, I still think they can be competitive, and I feel, touching wood here, I feel like we might get V3 proper back once we get to a best of five series.
I think the point of alarm here is in that, at least for V3 and confidence points, they started the spring split so strong, and now they've basically lost in a space of 2 days to their two nearest competitors. Both Rascal Jesters, they've now got a 0-2 record against Rascal Jesters, I believe.
Yes, they do.
And they lost to Sengoku as well.
Oh, that's huge.
They've got DFM next week. Like, if you look at their head-to-heads versus all the people around them who are their nearest competitors, they are significantly worse than everybody else in the league. And I think and that is a bit alarming coming into playoffs, because that's the kind of thing which does get to your head. Reckless was basically doing an interview after G2 beat Fnatic. He said, after we beat Fnatic, I felt confident to say to the rest of the guys, we can win the spring split. Because until you've shown you can beat every team, I don't feel confident doing that. And the problem is, V3 have now just lost to all the teams that are in contention with them. And that's a little alarming, beyond how the games went.
Any thoughts, Nightmare? Along those lines?
I do think that it's definitely something about the head-to-head matchups do matter, and I was just scanning over the webpage and being like, okay, well, what does this mean in terms of tiebreakers? What does it mean in terms of end of split? It basically means Rascal Jester are they're basically second place, because V3 would have to go 2-0, and Rascal Jester would have to lose both of their games for V3 to leapfrog them at this point, because they have the 2-0 head-to-head against them. There would be no tiebreaker in that scenario. And Rascal Jester also have themselves, you know, have they got an Axis game in the last week?
They got Axis and Sengoku, so they got Axis a good week.
Yeah, and on the other side, Sengoku got
1-1 at worst.
Yeah, I mean, Sengoku, I think they lost to Rascal Jester in the first matchup of that, I'm trying to remember.
Yes.
Something like that. So I think that actually Rascal Jester Sengoku could be pretty large.
Rebate.
But this top four, there is one game between each of these damn teams. Like, we've got 10-9-8-7. I know we said that for the entire table heading into Super Week, it was like a straight line of like one win between each team. And we have had that separation between top and bottom. Now we have. But I look at this and I was thinking like, yeah, okay, right. We do have a huge thing in terms of these head-to-heads, the mentalities heading into it. There's one game day left. There's two games left for each of these teams. This Super Week might have crushed V3's confidence in a lot of ways. I don't know what this roster is like under adversity. We saw that from V3 in spring last year, right? When they had that different roster, when they had Archer and Boogie. It was a big learning opportunity for them. They had to go to a five-game series against CGA. They won that, and then they went against DFM. They got a bit slapped. It took that for them to really come into fruition in that summer split. They will really want to get that top two berth, but I am actually not really sure they're going to get it now, and I think that really means that V3 are unlikely to be title contenders at that point, because going through the lower bracket is so difficult. It's so difficult.
I think that's a really good comparison between V3 of spring 2020 and V3 now, because obviously they're a lock. Pretty much, I agree with you as well. They are Rascal Jester are locked for second, meaning V3 are going to be absolutely fighting to be staying third, ideally, obviously. So they'll be in the exact same spot as spring 2020 because they were third place in that one. They get to pick who they want to go against, and then they'll have the difficult match versus Sengoku.
Which means they have to run Sengoku, Rascal Jester, DFM to win three best of fives. That is. Genuinely very difficult. This is not a one-team region anymore. That's a really difficult run.
But it's something that needs to be put out there. Like V3, if they're gonna run it back and they want to represent MSI, they need to do something like that, and it's gonna be fucking hard.
It absolutely is. And the thing is, like, this wasn't entirely what I will call a bad week from V3. The two games they won were really good wins. The problem is, I actually think at least the game versus the Jesses, they got horribly outdrafted. They put themselves in a bit of a hole there. And then I think there's possibly a question to say that actually even then they came out to a decent early lead, and then they started like inting a little bit with some other plays, basically. Partly because it was so difficult to disengage when Zion's running at you from three screens away and you need everything in your kit to try and disengage. Disparity.
You can't kill center through a Zion. We've seen that multiple times now.
Yeah. And Zion can certainly do the same to your kindreds, Azir, Aphelios.
Emperor Divide. What's that?
I'll give that one. That one's a little bit of a draft. I think potentially the other loss Sengoku. I think, is it Sengoku?
Sengoku one was just what masterfully played right by Sengoku.
Yeah, it really was, and I think part of that one was again, V3 do look a lot worse when they are kind of not aware of what plays are happening sometimes. Like, Cog got caught out multiple times by people coming top and just didn't seem to adjust particularly well. And even against the Scion from Rascal Jester, and like, they were kind of consistently caught out by very similar plays down the river with Scion running at them. And obviously, that one's a lot harder because, like, what do you do? But at the same time, it's like, okay, still some things to work on here for V3, and it's interesting to see some of these other teams have begun to exploit them a little bit.
I think particularly in that loss versus Sengoku is right for you to touch on the top lane thing, because Cogwalk went 0-5.
0-5-0
versus Camille matchup. And don't get me wrong, Gragas is fine versus Camille in a 1v1. Mm-hmm. You can farm from range, you can trade back pretty well, you can cancel the hookshot with a body slam. But they lost the information battle. They didn't know where Crash was most of the time. I think it was a level one, actually, where like we saw like an attempted five-man stack and we saw some vision traded. And that meant that, credit to Crash on the side of Sengoku. I guess we talked about it from their perspective a little bit. But no, I mean, I think that the top side of Sengoku really stepped up. I think Paz and Crash just completely punished Cog. And on the other side, this is the first time we've seen V3 playing with a lack of information. And it really hurt them.
Yeah, not sticking to their standard place, not really doing what they expect to do. Do you have any last things you want to say, or do you mind if we just move over to the jesters?
I think I'd just be going deeper into the point Alex made about...
Sure.
So, but basically what I'd say is, like, V3 had a really interesting level one with the Gragas and the Lilia that didn't play out, and then they were forever scrambling and didn't seem to be able to come up with a new plan on the fly, at least when it came to vision control. So, interesting. I'll be interested to see whether that's just a one-off or whether it'll happen again.
I would agree. Our only team to go 4-0, gentlemen. Sadly, not 0-4 like Axis. 4-0 was Rascal Jester due to them beating Detonation Focus Me. What can I say? My hat is off to all of the players and backroom staff. Let's just gush, guys. The 7 win streak. Like, they need a face at Sengoku and Axis
so
to
good.
Ram the gauntlet and add them to their Morello Nomicon. Like, this team is just...
The magic.
I'm loving watching them right now.
So two things before I hand over to everybody else. Sol had the weekend of his life. His numbers at the minute, guys, are absurd. He has got the second highest DPM for any AD carry in the world who has played more than 3 games. That includes ERLs, includes everything else. If you take out ERLs, he is the highest DPM. He's got about 745 DPM average over like 13 odd games, which is absolutely absurd. This guy has crushed it this weekend. Beyond more than that, but like his numbers jumped particularly from this weekend. Second thing as well is I was talking a little bit with this and Lexi on the desk at the time, but big credit to the coaching staff. Their coach is a guy called Vikal, who is ex-KT Rolster, ex-Starhun Royal, ex-RNG, ex-Top Esports, ex-Supermassive, ex-All Knights. Like, this guy has won in, like, feels like every region in the world.
Or at least got into the finals at minimum, right? Yeah. Like this guy can go the distance. He finds ways around it. He can go into completely different kind of environments in different parts of the world and just communicate and explain how he wants the game to be played, communicate and connect with his players. And I don't know how he's doing it with so many different rosters, but he's got the gift of something there, guys.
Speaking of that, I know that Sam brought up Sol's DPN numbers and obviously Vikal and the coaching staff. So this reminds me a little bit of... So I cast a university match back in 2020 spring, I suppose. Just
spring,
before like the... kind of things started coming towards the end of the split for a lot of other teams. And one of the teams in there very quickly picked up on a patch change. It was like, all right, well, let's just play Ezreal in the bot lane, Trundle in the jungle, and Wukong top lane. And they all then ended up becoming super meta in 2020 spring, right? Mm-hmm. Sol playing Ezreal here and playing it the way he's doing is very, very important. It seems like V3 have picked up their power picks and said, this is the pick you need to ban because this does way too much in the current meta. Heck, I had an ARAM match the other day where, like, just by standing and shooting as Ezreal, I got, like, 4,000 DPM. Like, the highest DPM I've ever had in a game myself. And I'm sat there, I was like, until I had my hands on, like, in a close game on that champion before, I'm like, how does this champion do so much? The item build for Ezreal is absolutely stupid. And Sol played 3 games of it. Having stuff like Sorilda's Grudge being an item which gives you 20 ability haste, ability slowing on hit, armor penetration, and then also like giving you like a boatload of AD too, is far too much for this champion. Ezreal has found himself another broken build, and obviously Rascal Jester is sat like, well, Sol is like, as opposed to Zenit, who played the Ezreal a couple of times, Sol, you absolutely can rely on to carry with this pick, apparently.
You don't even have to build mythics. That's no. The fuck thing. Guys, like, they do this item change, and I never needed to learn any of the new items because I can just remember the old stuff because Ezreal can just do that instead. Oh, God. Sol is a madman. And to back up this point, like Initialize was saying around how Sol, if you take out the ERLs, he's the number one player when it comes to DPM. Axis is boy is number two.
I know, Honey's been putting up great numbers as well, but he just the rest of his team isn't collapsing
Boy's
around
him. Elo hell.
Well, for the record, Ezreal gets up to like 60-65% cooldown reduction with a full build.
It's
absurd.
He's the only champion that really benefited from this, from the cooldown or rather ability haste change. Everybody else, it's been the exact same. Almost like it's been hilarious because a lot of people were having problems with the items, and it's like, of course, Ezreal's the one that figures out the broken build.
Yeah,
the fact that you can get like so Duskblade gives you 20 ability haste, which is already nice. Mm. So again, like most ability haste items gives you 20 unless it's something like Cosmic Drive, which where you get an FAP gives you 40. If you get Duskblade and every other item after that gives you an extra 5 ability haste. So with Duskblade, Essence Reaver, Boots, and Cerilda's Grudge, you've got 80... you've got 95 ability haste.
That's
off of
so
that.
Dumb.
You get another item with 20%.
That's so dumb.
Another 20 ability haste item is Ravenous Hydra, which also applies a load of on-hit effects for him. That's another 20 and 25 on that. So that's 115 from 5 items, and that's including your Boots. So you can get up to like 140 ability haste with a full ability haste build.
Jeez.
He just shits out damage.
That's
dumb.
Then this is why Sol is getting huge damage.
Massive
Sam, do you want to move over so we can talk about like Kinatu or Hachimetra at the moment?
I mean,
let's talk about the other Rascal Jester player. We're backing on Sol too much here.
I mean, Sol had a fantastic weekend, but it feels like the rest of the Jesters have really come alive. Kinatu is still putting up fantastic
games. He's the enemy!
He did a really good job, and more than just this as well. It's like the thing that is catching so many teams off guard is because they are drafting in a way that nobody else is. They've got picks that nobody else does, and this was kind of the old school DFM thing. It's like, oh damn, we've got to think about Ziggs and Heimerdinger. Like, what? And like, how do you deal with that? Whereas these guys, like, yeah, we're pulling up Sylas in the mid lane this time out, and Skarner. No one else is playing Skarner right now. We'll play Skarner. Kane, how are you guys feeling about Kane right now? And everyone else is like, what? What? and that kind of Sion support, they're also pulling that kind of thing. There's a little bit more creativity in a way that is tearing apart other people's drafts. It's not just random picks because you fancy the random pick. They're actually doing it quite intelligently.
Well, think about the DFM game where they play the Seraphine Ezreal lane against Gang and Yutapong. They're just like, no, we're not going to let you ever come near us. You can stand the fuck back. And that's where you go, how are they really going to kind of have this theme going on? What are they going to play? I mean, I guess we could see Recap play Syndra or maybe Orianna, a control mage. Oh, wait, Orianna's banned. Oh, he can't play Zoe. What's he going to pull out? Nymera? Zillion?
I didn't expect to see this in meta. The Everfrost changes have made this champion pretty strong in a certain sense. He didn't even need to go for that, though. He went for the Liandry's instead. I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe it's going to be an Everfrost thing coming out. No, just bringing out a lot of relevant damage. And again, if you are going to have supports for one champion in the game, right now, Ezreal's a pretty good shout for that champion, right? It just gives you a lot of stuff.
I think it's also the Chrono Shift as well versus a Nocturne. It just makes Nocturne's life so hard. Like, he dives in and he goes, well, that was a waste.
Also, Zillion is just generically very good versus stuff like Xayah too, even though you can dash in with a Gale Force, just having to be zoned off by bombs and the rest of it. If Gale Force wasn't in the game, that's unplayable. Because it is, it's playable, but still kind of awkward.
Hard.
And yeah, I think Sam's got the right point in terms of like they're drafting just in a way which is just you have to take account of it now. And the other thing is that, I mean, I know that Kanati beating Ebi in that game, right? And I mean, in fairness, you know, Ebi still had a prominent role in that game, still went ahead in CS on the matchup and all this other stuff. But you have to have a certain amount of confidence to go up against Ebi and say, yeah, I'm just going to play this counter matchup. I'm going to play the Camille into the Gnar. I'm going to do well at that. And apparently in the interviews, I can't remember who it was for Rascal Jester. It might have been.
I'm looking for it right now.
Because I know that Sajipura.
Oh, it was Hachimecha. It was Hachimecha that asked them, and then he was like, "Can you beat his Gnar?" And he was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Okay."
It's like, sure, why not? And it's like that confidence coming in is so important. I think it was Sajipura that once again that translated that for us in the Discord. So thank you very, very much for that. But yeah, I think that inherent confidence helps you take down a lot of teams. If this is a team which wants to go international, you need that confidence, because we saw what happened to V3.
I've got the quote. I've got the quote.
Yeah, if you see what happened to V3 last year at Worlds Play-Ins and stuff, one of the things is that they didn't end up playing with very much confidence. They ended up kind of getting dragged down by a lot of the atmosphere of the event and being rookies at the event and then losing a couple of games and that snowballed. So having that kind of confidence, it bodes well if Rastodos do want to push forward, win a split, and go to MSI.
Yeah, the quote that Achimecha actually posted on Twitter before the DFM game. So the day before the DFM game, coach comes up to him and goes, "What do you pick when your opponent picked Gnar?" Kanadu's response, "I can play Camille." Achimecha, "Can you play against Ebby's Gnar?" And Kanadu, "No problem." Like, yeah, I got this.
I love it so much. Fun fact as well about this victory. So this is a little note. If you thought the CLG versus TSM
of 1,176
days was long, this was the first time in the regular season, I may add, that DFM had lost to Rascal Jesters for 2,198 days. It had been that long since the Jesters got a single win versus DFM in the regular season.
Is that like season 4? Season 3?
That's earlier. Pretty much since the league started. Like, it's been that long. I mean, don't get me wrong, DFM have been incredibly dominant. I don't think anybody has a winning record against them, really. But at the same time, holy, that is a long lost streak.
That's nuts.
That is it. I think it doesn't fully take into account the old playoff system where they would play best of threes or different systems. So it doesn't count the individual wins in a series. That's why it's not a completed victory. Still, they haven't been able to actually get a full proper win over DFM really ever, which is just so absurd. And actually, gentlemen, let's move on and talk about Detonation Focus Me, the final team to recap this part of the show. They're still at the top of the table, but for how much longer? Overall, the results were pretty reasonable. I don't have a problem with them. They went 3-0 with the roster that we've been seeing from all split long, so that's really promising and good. The issue is, and we need to talk about this, gentlemen, their one loss was when they brought in Syros and Gang, and it felt like a very different version of DFM when it came in.
Last draft versatility, we knew that coming into these rosters, and no stage time, right? That's not an insignificant thing. I don't want to detract from Rascal Jester's win, but like I look at that and I'm like, So part of this is like you just know the nature of the champion pools of these players, and they kind of drafted how you'd expect DFM of old to draft, I suppose. And then the other thing is that, well, yeah, of course you don't have that synergy you would have had from playing the whole split together.
I think I'll also add that it was actually a very, for a lot of that game, it was neck and neck for ages. It was like bloody back and forth for just little, just getting slight edges until it just became way, way too much. And then Sol hits like critical mass and runs over things. So, I mean, it was just a really fun game to watch, that one. And, you know, Jess has rightfully, I think, came out on top just off being better, playing better in the mid and late games and probably having an easier draft to execute in some ways. I'll also add on, I think it's quite interesting they sub in Gang for this game. And this might be me just reading a little bit too deep and pulling a few too many tinfoil hats around about. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting that obviously the weekend they have to play against Sol and Secret, they draft in the guy who is going to be better in the 2v2 in lane to try and ensure that they have a bit more laning prowess. They're saying, okay, Seros is back in, but the point is at least this way we're not going to get run over in the 2v2 if Kazu's down there. And they do, in fairness, get first blood off that one.
I thought they were going to do that versus Gango and Ensi, actually. I thought that, okay, if there's a bot lane that you got crushed by, it was that Kalista lane where you lost that first time, right? Actually, in that game, Kazu ended up doing pretty well. They forced flashes to level 1. They had a dive later.
They got first blood down there.
They got first blood. Actually, that 2v2 went really well for them. But they are still not Yutapon and Gang, who have been the best bot lane this region has ever seen and continues to be so, even, you know. But it's good to see Gang coming back on stage. I'm not really sure what they were planning with the roster change. I don't know whether they just wanted to have, like, good experience for them on stage for this split, but it didn't work out.
They might have been maybe trying to get them in to maybe warm them up in case we have to bring them in for playoffs. Who knows? I think playoffs is definitely a spot where maybe against a certain team they wanted to. Maybe the Rascal Jesters were a specific team that they were like, well, there's a good chance we might actually do the gauntlet match versus these guys. So let's see if we can get a game in for Syros and Gang. It didn't work out. I think that's a really good point around Gang. Though the problem... I had a huge problem, and I will never not have a problem in spots where Heimerdinger makes sense. Heimerdinger did not make sense in the way that they drafted this, and it kind of really got made painfully obvious in a lot of spots because Syros was just a step behind. Now, this doesn't help that obviously Ebi had not a great game, or rather, Hachimecha had a really good game.
Yeah, Ebi struggled
versus Hachimecha having a really good game and Kinatu being really confident. Steel wasn't able to get online, so it all came down to Utapon and Gang, and they were in a really rough matchup of a Seraphine Ezreal lane, so it was always going to be hard. Their draft didn't help them, but outside of that one game, because we can't look at just that one game for DFM.
There are caveats to that one.
Yeah.
Every other game that DFM played, it was really good from them. Every other team looked worse. And that's not something I would say about every other team's victory. Now, it does become a lot easier when you get to go, okay, well, what were the other games that Destination Focus Me played? Okay, well, they played Axis. Well, of course they should look good against them. Yeah, I agree. But they also looked pretty good against Sengoku Gaming and Crest Gaming Act. They had the fastest game, as we've already mentioned, and Destination Focus Me improved their speed run. They slapped Crest Gaming Act, and it wasn't even close. Nation was 0-0-0 on a Lulu, was not able to do anything for his team, sadly. Mm. And bless Sengoku, they tried to do their slow, methodical new try. They got Gango on his most played historic champion of the Kalista, and it just didn't matter. Everyone on Detonation Focus Me just went dive, 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 and just pulled apart everything. They're really good guys.
I will say that against Sengoku, the early game was not clean from DFM. They lost.
It's not meant to be versus a Kalista.
But that was kind of by their own doing, because they got first blood against the Kalista, and you're like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, it was a good first blood as well.
They got first blood versus Kalista. Fantastic. Really well played from the 2v2 of DFM. And Steel comes down, tries to clear up a second kill. He overextends, recalls, and tri-brush. His bot lane recalls, and he dies. Yeah. A second later, Ebi finished off in a solo kill by Paz. Never thought I'd be saying that about the LJL. And you suddenly sat there like, oh, bollocks, the Camille's ahead. We've not got far enough ahead in this 2v2 because we've just had a really awkward moment where now Steel is not on the map for a minute because he's dead and you can't kind of reapply pressure. And it got to a point where Sengoku managed to find a series of picks versus DFM and Steel didn't have the best early game. And it meant that you were looking at really Aria as the one person who was uncontested in their lane. And waiting for them to do something. And eventually DFM came online with these team fights, huge team fights. This is the kind of team where we knew that their team fighting's prowess was going to be almost unrivaled. I think the last game that Sengoku had versus them, the reason why we didn't see that same kind of team fight level is just because their draft just hamstrung them so much. And not the case in this one. Tristana Azir is a recurring combo within the LGL, and DFM played it immaculately in late game team fights.
Yeah, I'll also say, yes, Sengoku might have got a couple bits back, but they never really managed to snowball the lead. They kind of got a lead, and then it just stayed stabled for, 15 minutes. And, you're looking at okay, I'm stable versus a Tristana Azir, and I am an Ignite Camille, a Kalista, and, at that point you're thinking, we haven't got Drake control, we've traded, Herald for Herald, Dragon for Dragon. We haven't got a lead. This is problematic. And then Aria just destroys them, along with Utapon, who managed to get some scaling. Yeah, I agree. Particularly Steel's death of the Tri-Brush was really sad, because he was inches away from getting the kill and gets turned around on. And I think that's sometimes the way that both these teams like to play, is they do sometimes really push for some of those edges. And it was a really fun game as a result. But yeah, I think DFM proved stronger over the course of the game, and I think Sengoku probably were going to be a little bit frustrated that they couldn't snowball harder, with having managed to catch a breath in the bot lane when it looked kind of doomed for a while.
Yeah, I mean, overall, Detonation Focus Me is still the team to beat. They're still in that top spot, while potentially their gauntlet match contender might be looking rather happy to play against Detonation Focus Me, as they have got that 1-1 record versus DFM. this Rascal Jester. Obviously, there is a slight caveat with how we're going to be looking at them. Obviously, we know that they've got some wins over DFM that, well, their first game, they didn't have a chance. In the second game, they played Cirrus and Gang. So how much are we going to really think about that? I think a best of five is going to be very important to see from both these teams. Gentlemen, we must move on to our next topic, as we can probably talk to ad nauseum about the teams, but let's actually talk about some topics around the teams now. I think it's safe to say, with the schedule, we know exactly... Well, we already know that four teams are already locked in place. We know that Destination Focus Me and Rascal Jester are most likely going to be the team skipping first round and going straight into that gauntlet match. Sengoku Gaming and V3 Esports will probably be either third or fourth in their respective spots. That is still up for contention, even though there is a win between the two. It's important to see. Crest Gaming Act are most likely safe to say they're probably going to be taking the fifth spot. But sixth place is still very much available for three teams. Yeah. The only way that Crest Gaming Act can't keep it is if they... lose a tiebreaker and they go to the very bottom of it, but I don't think there's any other way it happens outside of Axis 2-0-ing and one of either the Hawks or Burning Core going, which basically would force Crest Gaming Act out. So we can pretty much, within reason, say they're very likely to make it. Meaning that CGA versus Axis is a very important game for Axis for their hopes to even try and keep it, because obviously a win over CGA would push them up, meaning that they would definitely at least keep themselves in contention for the tiebreaker match that is definitely happening in week 7, which is going to be the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks facing off against Burning Core. Now, the reason I think it's safe to say that this team will be the one that probably makes playoffs, because Crest Gaming Act probably won't win versus... Well, Axis probably won't win against Crest Gaming Act, meaning it all comes down to the Hawks against Burning Core, because Burning Core's other opponent is V3.
Yeah.
I've not got that happening. The other opponent for the Hawks, DFM. I ain't got that happening. And the other match for Axis, it's against Rascal Jester.
I don't see that happening. Yeah, that's really rough.
And the other game for Crest Gaming Act is against Sengoku. So I don't see that one also happening, meaning it basically comes down to these two games. If Axis win, and then whoever the victor is out of Hawks versus Burning Core will get a tiebreaker match. If that doesn't happen, Crest Gaming Act beat Axis, then the Hawks versus Burning Core is our actual tiebreaker match, but we just get to skip tiebreakers and have it in week 7.
And why this is important is that Axis and the Hawks have already played each other twice in their 1-1, so we will get we will get a tiebreaker in that scenario. Burning Core, the Hawks won their first matchup. Then again, if they lose this match, they're probably not going to get into that situation anyway. A chance, but they'd have to take down DFM, and we know. Yeah. You can't really bet on that. If you're someone that wants to bet on stuff, don't bet on that one.
Bet on DFM.
Bet on DFM. I mean, you say that. The thing is, though, I think actually one of the more likely tiebreakers is actually DFM Rascal Jester, because if DFM lose to V3, which is not outside the realm of possibility, it could happen, then they are 1-1 without Rascal Jester, and Rascal Jester are likely to 2-0 their week, although Sengoku might end up putting a...
That's true.
So Rascal,
how do we decide match of the week, lads? Because
this is so hard.
In the Hawks Burning Core, because that actually is figuring out placement
that
and making it.
I think it has to be that one.
But then, as you mentioned, Rascal Jester Sengoku, DFM V3.
Those are great games.
Great matches, yeah. Really, really good matches.
I mean, it's that middle three games of Jester Sengoku, DFM V3, middle two, followed by the Hawks Burning Core a couple of games later, which just sounds really enticing, because that could potentially decide quite a lot. I think it probably has got to be the Hawks Burning Core, just on percentage chance of it being
what it means and importance, right? Yeah. I don't think it will be the best game of the day.
No, I agree. I mean, I'll say there's a couple interesting things for you to keep an eye on. Remember, the Burning Core do have the 2-0 head-to-head versus Axis, whereas the Hawks are only 1-1. So obviously these guys are still tied. So if people do get wins they shouldn't have, there is a world where Burning Core kind of get in and contested into a spot because Axis I've just not got the head-to-head versus Burning Core.
You know who also has a head-to-head? Sengoku V3. There's a real chance, since they're only one win apart, that we get something between them two. Because there are really close matchups between like Rascal Dress and Sengoku, I reckon that'll be close. I mean, the bot lane matchup, though, is going to be so fun. And then like DFM V3 might go weird. We could have a top. We could have like a top four tiebreaker, which we've not had.
A top four. That could be a lot of fun. That could be a lot of fun.
So, gentlemen, I think a big question also is: will Rascal Jester tie Detonation Focus Me and V3's record from 2020 spring and summer, respectively? Are we going to see the 9 win streak matched once again by Rascal Jester this time? And that's 3 different rosters, 3 different orgs.
Speaking of this, though. The only team which can that can match the actual record from like the game record from last two splits is DFM, because the record was 12 and 2 for DFM in spring and then V3 in summer. So DFM could do that again in this spring, but they need to 2-0 this last week.
I think I probably favor. I think Jess have a good chance of going 2-0 this week. I think they are more complete than Sengoku right now. While I think DFM probably have slightly more raw mechanical talent, probably pound for pound. I think Jess have got a little bit more raw, little bit more spice in the drafting tank right now. And I think that could potentially put Sengoku in a difficult position still. So I actually think Jess could end up at least going, I think they could end 11-3 this split.
That's a plausible point. Gentlemen, let's move on to our final topic of the podcast, because we've been obviously perusing and giving some context for week 7 and playoffs. But now let's actually talk, now that we're done, what were our thoughts on Super Week overall? And now that we're almost done with the spring split, we've got some hot takes to start dishing out to people out there on the internet. We've got some things we need to say and our thoughts. And obviously, now that we know that MSI has been confirmed, it is happening. It's going to be over in Iceland. So, hilariously, actually, this is a closer MSI normally for us, because normally it's on the complete opposite side of the world.
It's actually been really nice timing for us.
Timing-wise, even if we do any form of coverage, we'll be a lot more reasonable as opposed to first thing of the morning or in the middle of the night, rather. Yeah. Are Rascal Jesters now the best team in the LJL? They're looking like they are with streaks and everything. We've seen what this is historically. We saw when Detonation Focus Me were probably the best team. Okay, maybe in spring it was actually Sengoku. The split, the obviously the difference happening in this between the gauntlet match and the finals, that bullshit happened, whatever, asterisk. V3 looked to be the best team, and then they showed it. We've at least got a contender for the crown, right, in Rascal Jester.
My worry
No, you go. You definitely went that first. Go.
Okay. So, I think the caveat would be, why aren't DFM the best team in the LJL? That'd be because, like, you have to qualify it, right? Because that's the competition. It's between these two teams, because V3, they didn't have a great Super Week, and therefore, like, you're like, okay, you'd have to show something in playoffs, and because you're likely to not be top two now, good luck with that. DFM's bot lane is really kind of all over the place still. I mean, they have had some really good 2v2s. I think Kazu's had some great moments, and when it comes to team fights, Kazu's engages have been great. But, like, Sol and Secret, probably the best 2v2 in the league now, right? I suppose.
I think there's still a world where both of them go a little over aggressive sometimes. But
yeah, I don't think they're immaculate.
I think it's been hitting more than it's been missing, particularly in recent weeks.
And I think particularly because Ebi has not had great laning phase, his mid game's been pretty okay. He's been managing to pick up farm even in like counter matchups, losing games. He's had more CS than his lane opponent. Still had impact on games and occasionally just straight out carried them himself. He's not been like prime Ebi, but he still had some good moments. But like, you're sat there thinking, okay, Ebi's not like dominant enough to be the Ebi which would always win LGL, because he lost that last split and it kind of broke the illusion a little bit, I suppose. I guess on the other side of things, you're looking at like, okay, well, what's happening between like Recap and Aria in this matchup then, right? And I think that Aria is still the best mid laner in the LGL. I think that he's still staked that claim and just said, look, I've been the most consistent. Yeah, sure, I had a couple of solo kills against me, but that's not really been enough to dethrone me. Recap, though, has been really good. His Syndra in particular has been something that you have to pay attention to. So the question is, okay, so you've got all of these individual parts working pretty well, and Hatch and Matcha has been absolutely stunning too. The question is, well, right, put together their playstyle and their drafting and all this other stuff, does that outweigh what DFM have? I think it's actually pretty close. I actually think that if it came down to a tiebreaker match, I couldn't back DFM 100%. I'd have to go say, like, it's probably like 60-40 DFM if it came down to a tiebreaker match.
I've done a little bit of hunting on this stats because I was curious myself, and like, Ebby is still statistically the best top laner by quite a long margin on most stats. Like, he's way, way ahead in things like DPM, damage share, gold per minute, all that kind of jazz.
He also dies a lot, though.
Let's have a look at average deaths. He is, yeah, he's pretty high up there. No, but he's like, he's kind of like 0.2 ahead of a lot of the middle pack, which is about 2.8. So he's pretty high up there. But yeah, he does die a fair amount, but he also just gets more kills than everybody else as well, that kind of deal. Though I'll say Kanatu is just ahead in average kills by 0.5. So it's worth keeping an eye out. Arya, way ahead in mid lane in pretty much every stat. Yutapon is in contention, but I think it's also worth pointing out Sol's stats are a little skewed after Super Week, where he just had a couple games which just like put his average way, way, way up. So like, yes, Sol's been performing really, really well, but Yutapon's not that far behind. So it is relatively even outside of the solo lanes where DFM largely have seemed to have got at least statistically a bit of advantage of a number of stats.
I think what's worth thinking about when you look at the head-to-head versus Rascal Jester and Detonation Focus Me, a big point is average game time between these two teams. Detonation Focus Me of about 26.40, which is blisteringly fast.
That's very fast, yeah.
That is very fast from the last five. And if you look at the last 10, that's 29.06. Like, this is sub 30, but like a comfortable amount. Rascal Jester's average game time, if you look at the full 10, we'll just do straight 33.3. Like 33 minutes and 30 seconds, like. Rascal Jester take a bit longer in their games, just on average. But this just kind of shows how quick, when Detonation Focus Me are really confident. And yeah, sure, the 21-minute burning core game is in here for Detonation Focus Me, along with the 21-minute 43 game. So, of course, their numbers are slightly skewed a lot lower at the moment. But then, on the opposite side, Rascal Jester have their two really long games against Crest Gaming, Act, and Burning and Axis of being 40-plus-minute games. Like, yeah. Detonation Focus Me, you could argue, when it comes to just, like, either knowing if they're going to win the game or they're going to even lose the game, they're far quicker at it.
Yeah.
Which, at least, could give Rascal Jesters a bit of hope, because when they do win, end up having a game go a bit longer, so...
I think that's something to DFM, though, right, is that they kind of, like, either win in pub stomp style, or it'll be messy, if you see what I mean. That's kind of the two playstyles where, like... And I think part of what makes this so exciting, why we're having this conversation in the first place, is it feels like Jesters are one of the few teams in the league right now that are willing to draw swords and match some of that. And they, you know, they pulled it out to win in the Super Week as a kind of a result. I think DFM are probably still the better team right now. But the thing is, I would not be entirely surprised if they did win in the playoffs, which I think is really exciting, because there is so much that the Rascal Jesters could play off right now. I think they have got so many little odd picks and ways of drafting which nobody else in the league does right now that I think is really exciting. I think Sol is on absolute tear, and I think Kanatu and Recap have been really strong laners in a way that I wasn't expecting from either of them.
I definitely agree with that. I think the other thing we really should mention is, obviously, we've touched on this a little bit, but gentlemen, is there any reason to bring back the old roster for DFM now? I can't think of one.
Bot lane.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the problem is, what version of Seros are you getting? Are you getting the Seros that in spring playoffs?
Well, Karma's getting buffs in 11.5, so...
He's not. Are you going to get the Seros that in spring 2020 came out and absolutely shattered V3 and Sengoku in their two series after that mid-playoffs break? And like played his Azir and just like ran over teams and had his Syndra doing similar things. Or are you gonna get the late regular split Seros of spring, or like even into summer, where he just was a liability a little bit. You knew what he was going to draft. It meant that it was very easy to draft against him if you prepared accordingly, and he didn't really achieve enough with those picks unless the rest of his team set him up for success, really. I think that right now, having the best mid laner in the league on Arya, having the ability to draft more versatile as well, where actually bot lane is less versatile in terms of its picks. Like, you know that you want attack support most of the time unless you're playing the Seraphine. You know that Ral Alistar fit most compositions. Why should you pick anything different? Whereas in mid lane, you do have a lot more versatility, and Arya has been showing that regardless, right? I think that I'd have to agree with you, Lexi. I don't see a massive reason now why you would, besides the fact that you want to just enable Utapon a bit more versus a better bot lane. Yeah. But the problem is, when you go to MSI or something, you're probably not going to... Well, I don't know if you can bring two substitutes. I think you can only bring one. So I don't think that works for them. They have to choose the main roster. So I think you have to go with the main roster.
I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you guys have watched the DFM comms videos that they've been putting out.
Bits and pieces, yeah.
So a big part of what I've noticed between when Syros was playing back in summer and spring and something I noticed when Arya's been playing, Arya's very quiet on comms. He'll only talk when big plays are happening, when he's yelling that something's happening in the fight. But outside of that, he's very quiet. Steel is a predominant shot caller for the team. And it seems like, I don't know if I'm looking too deep into this and everything else, but it feels like now Steel feels like he's a bit more confident, like he can stretch his wings out a little bit and be like, Ebi, do this, Arya, go here, Utapon, win lane, always, I choose you, Utapon, you win, and then just like figure everything out. It really does feel like the team's just like, now there's one voice. Yeah, I don't know if Syros was having an effect, but now, regardless, there is none of that there or anything. Steel says it, the team listens. Ebi is definitely the secondary shot caller on the team, but now it seems like there are less cooks in the kitchen, and I could see that now on the Rift, I would argue.
We said the same about Hoglet and Honey for Axes. We said, all right, maybe they came... Now they've got a better roster.
Not watch their videos. Been hard to watch Axes, I'll be honest.
Yeah, sure. But like we said the same about them early split, when like, oh yeah, maybe they're in a position to do better for themselves. I think the other thing is that, okay, what does shot calling often do? It affects your late game, particularly when you have more voice in the conversation. That's a big thing for G2. Just their late game shot calling is just very, very good. DFM's late game shot calling has still been really good. They
really
haven't been beaten in late game. Like, they haven't been beaten in late game. Not really. Not unless, like, they're, like, it's hilariously far behind. I mean, there was the Elder Dragon versus Rattle Despot. Again, that was the... Like, I'm talking about the new roster at DFM, right? Because, sure, you're losing Syros, and Syros occasionally did, like, the crazy Azir teleport flanks versus Sengoku in...
Again, he played... He was
in
a little
the finals.
Bit...
It was the spring finals.
Yeah. Syros reminds me a touch of people like High, where there's just a good... there's a macro weirdness to him, and a macro kind of, a little bit of macro magic there, which I think Arya still kind of has, frankly.
This is the thing.
So it's just like...
Look at Sengoku DFM, the one that we just saw, right? Where we saw Arya on the Azir, go completely deathless, had a Magi's in inventory, and was making the late game plays. You don't lose out on that for having Arya. I think it's the early game where you need that, maybe you need like a bit of assurance from someone like in the mid lane, giving you extra information. But then again, Rascal just kind of, you know, did it to him in the early game too, in their loss when they played the new roster, I suppose. So,
yeah. So, like, I think if you're asking for reasons to do it, if you're in a best of five and you need to throw a curveball for whatever reason, you have that option because it does offer you curveballs. And I'll also say that Gang is also just really, 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 really good. And if you're saying, actually, mid lane's not the problem here, but we just need some more playmaking and some roaming going on, Kazu's just being caught out too much, switching Gang, get Syros and something like the Azir or the Heimerdinger if you've got the right draft for it, and you go, okay, we've got a control mage, you can do what he needs to do. Got Gang in here on something like, I don't know, Rakan or Alistar, and he just gets to like outplay you and make those plays, you can understand why maybe that's necessary, even if actually, frankly, the roster they've been running most of the split has just been pretty superlative, frankly, outside of Kazu occasionally getting caught out a few times, which if that's the weakness you need to cover up, then maybe that's why you switch. But I think Nymera covered it pretty clearly there, you know. Why would you, if what you've got right now is what you'd want to take to MSI anyway, plus having a mid lane is really important, plus you mentioned the shot calling, the way Steel has honestly had a really good split and has looked largely in control of what he wants to do in that early mid game. I think that's been a real strength for Steel this split. So, you know, why
you bring me over to a really good place because of the MSI stuff. So, gentlemen, let's move over and talk probably about our final thing here. And obviously, we'll be talking about MSI in multiple different ways over the following probably several weeks until it's literally happening, and then we'll be covering it on the podcast. So hey, MSI is going to be a common theme for us now. Obviously, we finally made it out of play-ins, guys. So pat on the back for LJL. We did it. We finally did it. Let's go. I had the count.
Oh, for God's sake.
So at the moment, just with your gut feeling opinions, is it DFM that is who you want to represent the LJL at MSI at the moment? I mean, obviously, best team wins. We don't get to decide this. Just looking, if you got to pick, would DFM be the team you send, or would it be something like Rascal Jester, V3, Sengoku, or maybe one of the other teams you've just got a feeling about?
I think DFM would be my first call, but I wouldn't be sad to see Rascal Jesters go, because if they won two best of fives to get there and did it in style, then yeah, they've been looking really good. They're on a real hot streak, and you know, if they win the region at this point, all credit to them there. I think they'd have earned the right to go.
But I said the same about V3.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, right? Yeah, you're gonna go up against, like, I don't know, like Nuguri or like Lashai,
yeah. Showmaker.
Whoever's gonna be in top lane is Porkinatu. Like, what happens if you go up against Khan's Gangplank or some shit like that? You don't get to play the game as a rookie. You have to go in. Like, I know that Kanati's been confident.
Wonder picks Quinn and destroys you.
Fudge. He could beat Fudge.
This is the thing, actually. Like,
could you beat Blabber and Fudge?
So the thing is, like, we have the group system. We're gonna have a podcast episode about, okay, what do we think we could do against, like, so the LGL is going to be in the lowest seeded pool. We know that. That's off historical results. You can't argue against that. It's completely reasonable. So then the question is, all right, tier one teams, not, because there's like LCK, China, LEC, unlikely to beat them. It's unlikely. So then you're looking at, okay, who can we snipe from the second pool? So there's PCS, VCS, and NA. And I'm like, actually, like, NA sending Cloud9, if they send them, that's dangerous. But, like, I look at DFM, like, okay, at least Epi could do stuff to Fudge. Arya's going to be... Hopefully he doesn't get the rookie nerves. That would be the worst thing for this DFM.
Poor guy.
I trusted Arya. Yeah. He can 1v1 I believe.
A large part of me, like, gets to, like, play that, like, just deflection game and say, look, we're waiting for Worlds anyway when we have Gang in the roster. Like, yeah, that's what we're really waiting for.
That would be the real roster.
That's actually because, like, and so that means that MSI, you can kind of just take it as experience. But, like, and then, like, the bot lane's going to get rolled by Sven and Polkan. There's no way that works out well for us. Unless we've got some real, I don't know, dope them before they head out there. I don't know. Who knows? But I look at them like, yeah, I mean, it's still unlikely that we get above third in those groups. With this roster, I think a Rascal Jester could potentially go, like, fourth, though, as well. Again, so could DFM. I'm sat there like, yeah, okay. You need to have that experience at World, so I think DFM have that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Rascal Jester have the laning chutzpah. The confidence, the brawn to really stand up to a lot of these tier two, tier one teams.
I mean, there is a world where Sol and Secret just crush it. Like, they are good enough. Probably.
Is there?
They've got the experience.
Reckless?
I mean, these guys have been playing for a long time, and they did.
Brindy's Handsummer? Like.
I think they genuinely are quite good.
I don't see
Ghost rolling over for LJL.
I mean, like, I know that VCS rarely has, like, strong lane dominant 2v2s. Maybe they do okay versus them. But I think the problem when you're going against, like, VCS or even PCS, right, is that you just get rolled in the early game. You get dove, like, level 3, level 4 on a side of
the
map.
That's the one thing I'm more worried about.
And this is the thing, like, LJL is...
I was way more worried about for us.
This is going to be a whole podcast topic, so, like, this is just, like, the surface thoughts of it. But, like, my main thought is, oh, bloody hell, LJL is going to get closed out at level 3, level 4, because we're going to get ganked by PCS, VCS, LJL... Not LJL, yep. Sorry, LPL, LCK teams. We're just going to get rolled out.
Spider-Man meme. That's you, not me, LJL.
It's just me. It's just you. I'm just you, but better. To clarify specifically, not that I'm expecting Sol and Secret to, like, run over lanes. All I'm saying is, like, I do think they are competent enough to at least put up a strong fight and not end up, like, and go even at least. I could see them being a win condition, right? Like, I think Sol and Secret have given enough over the years in various regions, you know, including the LCK, right, to at least give them that credit.
Dude, RNG looks so scary right now.
Yeah, I think EDG's still the one I've got my eyes on.
Viper, Ming look just... Actually, they might be the best bot lane in the world, unless Viper is... I don't know, dude. I'm scared.
I still prefer Viper. That's understand, because Gala and Ming have been very good. They really have. There's just a lot of very good LPL bot lanes, though, so...
There's a lot of good one over. Like, I mean, Gen G looks scary if, like, Ruler and Life happen to make it. Like, I mean, I think, obviously, we're only touching very briefly on this topic, and there is a chance that DFM might show up. They might be way better than we think they are. They also might not show up to the world expectation, because these are the best teams and only one team from each region gets to go. So if anything, DFM should just be really happy they even get the scrim time versus some of these teams. And it might, hey, and if someone like Aria gets to kill in a 1v1 versus, I don't know, someone like Showmaker or BBD or Caps, or I don't know, Perks even, like there's so many, like even some of the lower level ones, like some of the mid laners in BCS and PCS.
Just inject like Aria's Sylas solo kills into my veins, thank you.
Right? Like, if Aria just, like, looks like a solo kill machine, at least we have another LJL talent that looks really good and might go somewhere else. And then people go, wait a second, LJL is starting to breed some pretty good talent. Hey, at least we keep the region going for longer than my 2-year prediction if we at least start having good talent come out of it. Like, people will keep investing in us. I'm all for keeping us around, guys.
We've got to hope. Please stay.
But with that, gentlemen, this will round out to the end of our podcast. We have covered our thoughts on Super Week and each of the teams through it. Obviously, we have 4 teams now locked for that. And let's quickly go over the standings. In tied 6th place, we have the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks Gaming, Burning Core, and Axis all tied together with 3 wins and 9 losses. Not Axis with 6 loss streak, Burning Core with a 3 loss streak, and the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks Gaming with a 1 win streak at the moment. Chris Gaming Act currently sitting comfortably at 5th place and most likely a soft lock at the moment for playoffs, with them being at 5-7 with a 1 win streak at the moment, picking up that win versus I believe it was Burning Core at the end. Sengoku Gaming is comfortably in 4th place and could potentially play have some contendership versus V3 and maybe get that slightly higher seeding, which they might like. V3 Esports sitting at that 3rd place and looking to fend off Sengoku Gaming from that opportunity. And Rascal, just as we've already mentioned, is probably going to be 2nd place against Destination Focus Me, as they will be playing in that gauntlet match, meaning they'll skip 1 extra round, which is always one of the most important things. And the great thing for them is they've already secured that before week 7, which is the most important week. Obviously, Burning Core and Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks will be playing in the potential game of the week, which is a weird spot to be saying, but hey, they're probably playing for that 6th place spot. Gentlemen, what are your thoughts for week 7?
Ooh, okay. I think there is a lot to play for. Interestingly, both the top of the table and around that 6th spot. Like, there is, I think, Jesters have got a lot to play for. V3 have a lot to lose, I think, are probably the two I've got my eyes on most. Mm-hmm. We're saying Goku kind of hunting around and being a bit opportunistic. And then I think you're right, Burning Core and SoftBank Hawks, as weird as it says, and they're clearly a cut below, particularly that top 4. One of those two, I think, is most likely to get in at that last spot in 6th. And as a result, I think that game is probably quite important too.
Nightmare?
I think on my side, I'm looking forward to see if there's a top 4 tiebreaker. That'll be really cool, because that's the first time that we're going to see like a real high-pressure match for like the top 4. We've not really seen that to that level before. That'd be really cool.
Nightmare are calling for his tiebreakers as usual. Myself and Initialize are excited for probably bashing our heads in versus Burning Core Hawks, as I imagine Nymera will probably be graciously giving me that match to cast over. He'll be like, oh, no, I insist, Lexi. You cover it. You brought it up on the podcast.
I had to do CJ Burning Core. You shut up.
I did the Axis game, sir.
That's true.
Not pull the contract card over me. No. But I will graciously also cover the Burning Core Hawks game, as that might be match of the week, so I'll technically cover it. And you can cover the exciting games of Detonation Focus Me. So hey, well, I scratch your back, you scratch me. As with that, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the podcast. As always, you can find this podcast on all audio streaming platforms, as well as we always upload this to our YouTube, if you're not aware of that. We also have all of our videos that came out around Super Week. We got them very out early. Normally, 24 hours was our turnaround, wasn't it, Sam? So we were
we did a really good job
on this one. So you can find all of our Super Week games with all of our guest casters of Kazakus. Kashka.
There we go. We got you. You keep wanting to go really British on it. Kashka, we are so sorry. We'll slap him for you later.
Great card. Thank you to all of our casters, as well as to Reed and Patrick, who assisted us in the life-saving task of producing for Super Week, as it is a lot to do with Super Week. But with that all said, from myself, Initialize, I believe I called you breathtaking and wholesome for Nymera. Thank you so much for listening and or watching, and we'll see you very soon for week 7.
Sort it.